Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Thank you for your patience. We are running a little late today. We did have some technical difficulties earlier today, but they've been resolved, so we should be good to go now. The next case on our calendar today is A23-0619, Robert W. Starbeck, individually and as trustee of the Arthur C. Starbeck Trust under agreement dated August 21, 2000, versus Mary Gibson et al. Each side will have 15 minutes for your initial argument, and appellants will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a clock that you can see in the grid view that shows how much time you have remaining in your argument. We are recording the argument here today. An audio recording will be available on our website within about 24 hours. No other recordings are permitted except with the express prior permission of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. So with that, counsel or appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Douglas D. Kluver. I am counsel for the appellant, Robert W. Starbeck, individually and as trustee of the Arthur C. Starbeck Trust under agreement dated August 21, 2000. We are asking the court today to reverse the decision of the trial court to dismiss the plaintiff's adverse possession claim, as well as reversal of the district court's decision dismissing plaintiff's claim for prescriptive easement. We are also asking that the court reverse the district court's denial of the appellant's motion for summary judgment on the respondent's counterclaims. The case that is currently before the court involves the appellant, who is a farmer. The appellant has been farming the field that's described in the complaint since 1974. So it appears that field, it was encroaching throughout that period on the respondent's property. That is evidenced by the photograph or the GIS depiction that went along with the complaint. The fact that the appellant had been farming that since 1974 in such a way that would enable him to acquire title of the land through adverse possession meant that by the spring of 1989, that encroaching portion of property, which
Mr. Kluver, we understand, yes, the factual background. How do you distinguish the Supreme Court's opinion in Dolmeyer? Because it's pretty clear, both in the syllabus point and in the body of the opinion itself, that says that any portion of a property, that you have to pay property taxes, or your adverse possession claim is out the window. So how do you distinguish that?
Well, first of all, what takes this out of that holding in Dolmeyer is the fact that this is clearly a boundary dispute between the parties.
Go ahead, Judge Cochran.
How does it become a boundary dispute when I think even in your brief, you admit that the parties understood the location of the boundary line between the properties? So I'm having trouble understanding how there is a boundary dispute.
I don't believe I ever admitted that in my brief or conceded that I understand the parties understood that there was a boundary between them, there's a boundary between Minnesota and South Dakota too. I know that it's there, but I don't know where it is on the ground. And that's not a part of an adverse possession claim. Well, my client hadn't been a survey. There was just his field that encroached on that property.
But didn't he try to buy it? I mean, he knew that it was not his parcel. I mean, where is it in the record that there's really an issue over that? Over where? I mean, generally the cases are, oh, there's a fence, so we assume that's where the boundary was. But in fact, right. You know, when you get a surveyor out there, it's 3 feet to the north or south. I mean, those are the kinds of boundary disputes. This is, you know, kind of knowing open, adverse, hostile. I knew I was on their property. I mean, that's your client's claim, isn't it?
Well, we don't know when or if anyone knew they were on the property at any point, given point. Understand
this. Also, in your brief on page 6, it says all parties at all times understood the location of the boundary lines between the properties. So that's where I'm having trouble. It's the sentence right before the argument, where the argument starts. So I agree with Judge Siegel. Typically, a boundary dispute is where there's some ambiguity at the border between two properties. And I don't see where the record supports that here. I think your argument was because they were using this property for more than 15 years, the boundaries changed. But back to Judge Siegel's question, isn't payment of taxes required for adverse possession to occur?
Well, getting to your first issue, the recitation of the facts in the brief are the findings that the court made. These are not findings that necessarily my client agreed with. The court made this finding that all parties at all time understood the location of the boundary lines between the property. I don't exactly know what the court meant by that. We all understood the boundaries. I understand that there's a boundary between Minnesota and South Dakota. That's not to say I know exactly where that is or that I could walk and point out this boundary line.
Well, in your brief, I don't see that you specifically challenged that finding. Maybe, you know, correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I believe we did because we said that this claim was a boundary dispute for the reasons I've given. My client had, because the court, again, I don't know what the court meant by that, finding that all parties knew where the boundaries were. Unless there's some survey done, how does anyone know exactly where a boundary is? That's how this field ended up encroaching on their property in any event. Was because
can you point to anything in the record that indicates that the parties considered this a boundary dispute?
If you look at this, the pleadings in this matter, we pled that he was farming part of his field encroached on the respondent's property. An encroachment is a boundary issue. It's by its nature. It's intruding onto someone else's property. That's a boundary dispute.
Isn't that different though? Isn't that intruding versus a disagreement as to where the official property line is?
Well, there is a disagreement because adverse possession happens by operation of law. So after the 15 years, as of 1989, that property changed hands without anyone doing anything.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but where is it in your complaint? I don't see it in the complaint anyplace that your client thought that there was the boundary was different than it was. I see that it says including a portion of their field that encroached upon the Gibson Poyer property. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing Poyer right, but I mean, it sounds like there's an acknowledgement there's a boundary and we were going over that boundary, and that's historically what's happened. So there has to be a summary judgment. So there has to be evidence in the record, and I don't see it in the affidavits or, you know, if you can point, and actually averments in a complaint aren't adequate anyhow in a summary judgment motion. So where, again, is there something you can point us to in the record to help us out on this boundary dispute issue?
Well, I think a complaint is a short, plain statement of the facts. I can't really add anything more. Obviously, we're claiming he owns a portion of the land. They're claiming he doesn't own the portion of that land. I don't see how that's not a boundary dispute. But beyond that, I don't have anything further.
I'm just looking at your argument. You seem to be arguing that as of 1989, after your adverse possession claim had been perfected, that then it became a boundary dispute. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
It's a boundary dispute when we made the claim of the adverse possession, and they came back and said, no, it's the old boundary. It's the boundary of record. And we're saying, no, it's not the boundary of record. It's the actual field location.
But But you're not arguing it was a boundary dispute during the 15 years of adverse possession, right? It became a boundary. I mean, I'm just reading. It says, consequently, as of 1989, the appellant was no longer adversely possessing any of the respondent's land as titled to the encroached farm property invested in the appellant. What had not changed, however, were the property descriptions of record. So it seems to me that you're arguing that that's when the boundary dispute came into effect, right?
Yes.
But in order to prove your adverse possession claim, you have to show that you paid taxes for 5 years. So aren't you skipping over that step before? I mean, because you're assuming you adversely possessed it as of 1989.
Well, I think that leads me to the Domeyer decision, which is confusing on its face. I understand the syllabus of the Domeyer 2 decision, which is a Supreme Court decision. But in Domeyer 1, this court said, as to parcel 1, which was a large encroachment, this court held that you must pay taxes on a large encroachment. And as to parcel 2 in Domeyer 1, this court said, on a small encroachment, you need not pay the taxes. And so what was appealed up to the Supreme Court was the decision on the large encroachment. The small encroachment was never appealed. That was never overturned. So when Domeyer 2 got it, all they were looking at was the parcel that was appealed, which was the large parcel. And they said, we're upholding the Court of Appeals. You must pay taxes on a large encroachment.
But in the rules of civil procedure dealing with a partial judgment, which is how you're up here, it's not a final judgment in the whole case, but a partial judgment. I mean, 54.02 says until the case is done, the case ain't done. And the district court can revise or other form of decision is subject to revision at any time before the entry of judgment, adjudicating all the claims and the rights of the parties. So how does that impact your argument? Because I understand, I mean, there is that issue. The other side did not petition for review on that part of our Court of Appeals opinion.
Exactly. I don't see that impacts the decision here. I think that the Court of Appeals decision in Domeyer 1, which was that the small encroachment does not have to have the taxes paid on it, that seems to be that was upheld or it was never addressed beyond the Court of Appeals.
Counsel, though, if you look at the Supreme Court, I agree with you that the appeal only dealt, or the Supreme Court decision focused on the larger parcel. But if you look at the language of the the Supreme Court's decision, it's very broad. And it says a claim of adverse possession to any portion of a separately assessed parcel requires the adverse claimant to pay taxes for at least 5 consecutive years unless a statutory exemption under paragraph 3 applies. And so that's very broad, any portion. And then if you look at footnote 2, it says, you know, we recognize this interpretation raises the question of whether the adverse claimant must pay taxes on the whole separately assessed parcel or just the portion claimed. So, you know, the Supreme Court recognizes that there's an issue there about how much tax needs to be paid, and they suggest that it's on the whole portion, but they don't resolve the question. But I think the language of this decision is very broad, so I don't see how we can apply it any other way.
I understand that issue, but it just does lead to this odd situation where the Court of Appeals, that's still good law. It was affirmed by the Supreme Court, yet it seemed to be reversed in language. So I agree, but that our argument is that this is a small amount that does not need the taxes paid. I can see I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Could you address the prescriptive easement argument in your rebuttal time? Because we didn't reach that, and that seems like the other major claim here.
Well, the prescriptive easement.
I'm sorry, but go ahead, Judge Cochran.
I think what Chief Judge Siegel was asking is if you could address that argument in your rebuttal, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I can do that. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, counsel, or the respondents, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Richard Sturmer. I represent the respondents in this case. The appellate standard of review is de novo. This is from a summary judgment. So the question is, are there any genuine issues of material fact? And did the trial court error in its application of law? I think when you go back and look at the record, what happened here is that they brought their adverse possession claim, but then realized that St. Paul Park Refinery Domeyer required a boundary line. That's where this boundary line issue comes up. If you read the complaint carefully, there's not one word about a boundary line dispute. The appellant's argument that the encroachment created the boundary line dispute is just factually wrong. The only reason there can be an encroachment is if the parties know where the boundary line is. And they've always known where the boundary line is. That's never been a dispute. But if you step back...
Where is that in the record? How do we know that they knew where the boundary line? Because looking at the photograph that was submitted, I mean, that the farming area goes right over, you know, what is the, you know, the line according, you know, to the county registrar's office. But right. But where in the record is that?
So if you look at the respondent's answer and the affidavits of the respondents, you'll see a statement that everyone knew where the boundary line was, and that the respondents, my clients, excuse me, gave permission to the farmer, not to the owner, but to the farmer that was farming that encroached land. He gave them permission to farm that if he would clean, you know, just clean up the weeds around that area. There was never money exchanged for that. So it's not factually correct to say that the appellants have always farmed that since 1974. That's not correct. But if you look at the complaint, the answer, and the affidavits, you'll see that everybody understood where the boundary line was, but he's not old. I'm sorry.
How much property? I mean, what are we talking about at this parcel that constituted the encroached area?
Well, how much land property? Is that?
How just much the land is?
So the parcels are 40 acres, I believe, two 40-acre parcels, and that appellants own the north 40, we own, respondents own the south 40. I think the encroached area is just a couple of acres.
And the reason I'm asking, because if it's a couple of acres, you're talking about, you're not, that's not a boundary line dispute. If it's right. that large, that's an encroachment. Right.
But we also have the second claim that they're claiming adverse possession on the campground property. And I don't believe they ever define or state how much land that is, the campground property. But the reason I wanted to back up all the way is because the appellants want to make it seem like they have adverse possession, but for this property tax issue. But the record is clear that they never had exclusive use, and the use was not hostile. I mean, even in the
appellant. Oh, but that's a disputed issue of fact, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
So just based on the two undisputed issues of fact, number one, there's no boundary line dispute. The court found that. I think there's sufficient evidence in the record to support that finding. And I think they're obviously they admit they didn't pay the property tax. So based on those two findings that aren't disputed, I think that the court, because St. Paul Park Domeyer is on all fours, there's no way around it in this case.
So how do we get around the same question I asked Mr. Kluver? He's arguing kind of law of the case. You did not petition for review on that portion of the Court of Appeals decision. So
I'm not following.
What happens then?
Which portion?
On the farming portion.
So
because that's the part that was not included in the PFR, right? It was it the western? I could be mixing up east and west, but
you might be talking about the Court of Appeals decision in Domeyer and then the Supreme Court decision because
but what I'm saying is that, and I'm not saying it, Mr. Kluver is arguing that your client did not petition for review on our full opinion, that your client petitioned for review on, honestly, I don't know if it's a campground, the west portion, I think, and not the east portion, or it was the east portion and not the west portion. That's noted in the Supreme Court's opinion, as Judge Cochran pointed to footnote 2 in the Supreme Court's Domeyer opinion.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm really confused by what you're trying to say, but we didn't appeal this case. They appealed from a grant of summary judgment, and they appealed.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm totally, you're right. You're right. It's not your client. Sorry. Ignore that.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Thank you for being so patient with me.
Yeah,
okay.
No, that's fine. And then I want to address quickly, if I could, the prescriptive easement issue as well, because there, it's similar to this boundary line, except in the complaint, there's no mention of a boundary line dispute, but there is two words at the very end of the complaint asking in the alternative for a prescriptive easement. So in other words, I think it was kind of a throwaway claim. There's no facts in the complaint pled to support it. You have to kind of guess which facts would he point to, would the appellant point to support their prescriptive easement. But even if that's true, I think the trial court got it exactly right, that in this case, it doesn't make sense for a number of reasons. Number one, he doesn't need the access to cross over the respondent's property to get to his, which would be typical of a prescriptive easement. Number two, he has access to the property. He's always had the respondent's permission to use the property. They always knew he was using it. And they
again, that's a disputed fact. So yeah. We can't rely on disputed facts. But so on this legal issue, which is what the district court relied on, that prescriptive easements are limited to a need for access. Is there any case law? I mean, apparently not in the state of Minnesota that specifically says this, but elsewhere that says, yes, prescriptive easements are only if you have a need to traverse property. I mean, can it be a prescriptive easement for use? You know, like there's a nice wildlife area and I've always gone there and I, you know, kind of their claim, they made improvements. And so, you know, I've got a right to use it. It's not an exclusive right, because that would be, I mean, that's not part of the bundle of rights you get with a prescriptive easement. But on that legal issue, can you point us to something helpful? And I know the district court was like, well, I don't see any case law saying anything to the contrary, and this makes logical sense, and I can follow that. But have you been able to find a case kind of that would actually say that or help point us more clearly in that direction?
I think the trial court in its summary judgment order did indicate that pursuant to Romans versus Nadler, that the easement is the right to use land. It doesn't confer ownership. So I think the trial court did acknowledge that that is one of the things that a
prescriptive... Right. No. And that, I'm sorry, that wasn't my question. I mean, I think that that is the law. It's a right of use, not an exclusive, not an exclusive right. But the question is, use it for what? Or, I mean, the district court granted judgment on that issue, saying it wasn't needed for access, therefore it can't, you know, I'm denying the prescriptive easement claim on that basis. And so can you help us figure out, was the district court right there? Are there some cases saying that prescriptive easements can only arise where there's access, you know, where you need to get to your property, or you're going, you've always used it to get to the beach because you're not right on the lake, you know, those kinds of things. That's my question.
Yeah, and we did cite, I think, over 20 cases in our brief that talk about this, but I think where we have a little bit of a rub is that the way I understood the trial court's order was he was saying that the easement, the prescriptive easement, is for, that's what it's for, use of land. And a lot of times it's for, you know, using the land to access your own land. But I don't think he said, went so far to say, that's the only time you can get a prescriptive. I think he stopped short of that because he couldn't find any case law to support it. But here, if you go back to the record, there is no support in the record for a prescriptive easement. It kind of leaves us guessing at, well, what should we, you know, aim at here? We don't even know, because he's already had permission to use the property. And if he's had permission, why does he need an easement? So again, I think if you go back and ask yourself the question, are there any genuine issues of material fact regarding a prescriptive easement, and did the judge err in his application of law regarding that issue, I think the court should affirm the trial court, because I think it's well supported in fact and law.
Well, but here the judge made it the ruling as a matter of law. So don't we have to review de novo the legal ruling of the judge?
Yes.
With regard to prescriptive easement. I mean, the judge didn't even discuss the facts. The judge just said a prescriptive easement, that it's limited to access to the property. And the argument of the appellant is, no, that it's broader than that. I think that's the legal issue that's before us, right? I mean, am I wrong on that?
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think that if you review the record and the trial court's order, and the cases on prescriptive easements, you'll see that I believe he got it exactly right on the legal issue.
To clarify, though, are you arguing that the judge can conclude or notes that a use based on the owner's permission is not hostile, and to be a prescriptive easement, there needs to be open, hostile, exclusive, and continuous use?
Correct.
So, and are you arguing that there's no dispute in the record that the use was with permission, so therefore that element of a prescriptive easement wasn't met?
Correct. As it, because they, number one, they didn't argue it in their complaint, and number two, in the appellant's affidavit, he admits that he had permission to use it.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the district court's determination was focused on that this use wasn't needed for access as opposed to whether it was with permission or not. But maybe you read the order differently.
Yeah, I do agree that the court said that in this case, it wasn't needed for access. And in a lot of these prescriptive easements, that's what the grant of the easement was for. But here, he doesn't meet that part. So that's wrong. But also, as you point out, that he wouldn't have met the elements of a prescriptive easement otherwise, because the use wasn't hostile and it wasn't exclusive and all the other things.
But there is a fact issue over permission. Because, I mean, paragraph 25 of Mr. Starbuck's affidavit says that none of the defendants ever granted me permission to be present on the Gibson Poyer property. So that's a fact issue, at least. So then we're back. I mean, the district court granted judgment on prescriptive easement on a legal issue, right? Not saying there's no dispute of fact.
Right. I think that's right.
Okay. All right.
So if there isn't a case that says that a prescriptive easement must be for access, then did the district court err in its legal analysis?
No, again, I don't think so, because I think you're going too far with the judge's conclusion there. I think he was saying that if you read it carefully, and it's only a couple of lines, that prescriptive easements are for use. They're also usually for use and access to your own property, but he didn't say it has to be. He said in this case that the appellants didn't need the easement for access to their own land, which is true. But he didn't say in no case can a prescriptive easement ever be granted unless you need it for access to your own land. That's why I don't think he committed a legal error there.
Well, I'm just looking at the order, and it's on page 5, and it's number 11 of the judge's order. And he says, I think pretty clearly, plaintiff does not use defendant's property for access to his own property. Therefore, there's no prescriptive easement. I mean, that's pretty, and there's no discussion of the material, you know, that there's no issue of material fact. It looks like a legal basis for the ruling.
And again, I still think the ruling is correct under our facts. But again, I don't think he went to say that in all cases. Then he would be incorrect with the conclusion. But I think he was very careful in how he worded it and what legal basis he was, or what legal precedent he was looking at, and then kind of limited it to this case, his conclusion, which he has to do. Somehow he has to come up with a conclusion. But I don't think he said the law is you don't get a prescriptive easement unless you need it for access to your own land. I don't think that's what this really is decision means. Briefly on the
Council, your time is up. So if you just want to wrap up really quickly.
Okay, I was just going to say on the on our two claims for slander of title and purchase interference with contract, I think we've made out a prima facie case for those. I think we pled the element and supported those with an affidavit. And so I think that the Court of Appeals should affirm the trial court in denying the appellant's summary judgment motion on those two claims. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I think the issue as to the prescriptive easement is the issue as to whether a prescription easement is only available for access across to one's own land across someone else's, which seems to be what the judge is implying. And we believe that's not accurate. As to permission, we've always denied permission, and that certainly is a genuine issue of material fact that would seem to preclude summary judgment. This leaves us with a somewhat an interesting position as far as Domeyer goes, because the appellant is claiming under the unappealed portion of Domeyer that he is not required to pay taxes, yet Domeyer was affirmed by the Supreme Court. The lower Domeyer one was affirmed by the Supreme Court, and then the syllabus says something that would seem to reverse.
No, our opinion was reversed by the Supreme Court. Do you mean the district court? I'm confused.
No, the Supreme Court affirmed the decision of the Court of Appeals. That's what the case itself says, that the language is in the conclusion is, for the foregoing reasons, we affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals. That's Domeyer 1 that was affirmed by the Supreme Court. So we're in this position where, can we rely on that portion of Domeyer 1 that supports my client's position that this small encroachment, he need not pay taxes, which was affirmed by the Supreme Court? I believe the Supreme Court did make a mistake in the syllabus, but in being overbroad on the syllabus. But I don't know how far back that goes, because we're talking about land that would have presumably changed hands in 1989, and that would have been affirmed by this court in Domeyer 1, and then suddenly reversed tacitly by Domeyer 2. So
I'm sorry, it was my second screw up of the day. I didn't sleep well last night, so I apologize and saying yes. Domeyer affirmed the West parcel part of, yes. Yeah, thank you. And I'm so sorry to both of you for reversing parties and issues. And
so that
I'd like to go back to the prescriptive easement issue.
Yes.
So can you point us to the case that you think is most on point that you think supports your position that a prescriptive easement can exist even if it's not to access one's own property?
I agree with the district court that there is not a case that specifically supports that. So I don't believe I can. The case that we refer to would be the most apposite case that was cited in our brief, but the law relates to the use, and the case law never restricts what that use has to be. as long as it meets the requirements, it can, it seems like it could be any use. So we're kind of arguing the other way, that this use isn't restricted, as the district court seems to imply that it's restricted. So I cannot point to a case beyond the general case that allows a prescriptive easement based on use.
Thank you.
And just briefly touching on the summary judgment motion on my client or the appellant's claims or the respondent's claims against the appellant, I believe that the respondent did fail to present evidence, particularly as to damages in this case, and so that the court did err in not dismissing the respondent's counterclaim. I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to counsel for both parties for your helpful arguments here today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory timeframe.